Rob Has a Podcast is made possible in part thanks to the patrons of RHAP who allow me to debate whether Redwood or Bamboo would be better at winning challenges for way too many hours a week. To find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, visit robhasawebsite.com/patron or click the banners at the top of robhasawebsite.com. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who always tries to avoid making big moves out of the house, Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. And we have a great recap for you this week because Chaos Cass McEwen is going to be joining us on the podcast today. She's a very, very fun guest to have here on the show, and there's a lot to get into with her. So excited to have her joining us on the episode 8 recap. Of course, this morning I spoke with Nick Majorano and got to speak with the former RHAP blogger about his experience out in Cambodia, in Koh Rong. And so that's a fun exit interview if you haven't checked that out. Plus, we did the Survivor Know-It-Alls last night where Stephen Fishback and I disagreed greatly about whether or not this was such a hot move for Sydney. You can hear that conversation there as well. Watch it or listen to the podcast version. And of course, I'm getting ready over here to get into our voicemails with Akiva Whitaker. That's going to be coming up for you guys on Friday morning on robhasawebsite.com. Make sure you don't miss any of it by subscribing to the podcast. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. We always appreciate the star ratings and comments that you leave us on our iTunes show page. All right, I'm very excited for this podcast. I've been looking forward to this all week because in my mind, this is one of the best podcast guests that you could have. First off, that it's the perfect time to talk to her because of what's going on, but she never minces her words, and that's always appreciated on the podcast. Here she is, the queen of Ponderosa still, the great Chaos Cass. Chaos Cass, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good. I'm very excited. I hope you know, I mean it very sincerely. I'm very, very much looking forward to this.
I'm excited. It's like merge time is my time, you know,
yes,
on both seasons I've played. So I feel definitely like it's time for the queen to make an appearance here.
Good. Yes. You own all sorts of this craziness that's going on here at the merge in this season. And this is really, you know, we couldn't have picked a better episode yet this season to have you come in and talk about this. Plus, it's brains versus brawn versus beauty, which you know about. So very excited. How are you doing?
I'm great. We're moving to Texas, so my life's a little in flux. But other than that, you know, life is good.
Yeah. Now, why are you moving to Texas?
Mr. Cass got relocated for work. Mm-hmm. So we're moving to West Texas. Well, I haven't even been there. We bought a house. I haven't seen the house. Never been to the town. But that's how I roll. I'm still in California till the end of the school year and with the dog and my daughter.
Are you excited about moving to Texas?
I'm excited. I mean, I can carry a gun just like into Taco Bell, which sounds really fun, you know? So, I mean, I'm excited. There's no state income tax, so that's a good thing.
That's good.
Houses are really cheap compared to California.
Are you excited about just the idea of bringing a gun into a restaurant, or do you feel stifled that you can't bring a gun into a restaurant here in California and that you'll be able to do it there?
I just have this vision of me going to visit the Alamo just with the holsters and pistols and just walking around, you know, with a Survivor buff on. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm excited. I think Texas is kind of a mystery to me,
yeah,
being from the West Coast, you know, and we're kind of rednecky, you know. I've always lived, yeah, on ranches and stuff, so it'll be interesting. It's supposedly the most conservative town in Texas that I'm moving to. I don't know how that's going to work out.
Yeah, no nudie booty.
Yeah,
right.
We don't have a swimming pool. But that doesn't mean I won't go run around naked if someone pisses me off.
Well, harder to hold a weapon then.
I could just wear a holster.
Yeah.
Wow. This is not going where my notes don't show this happening.
Yeah. Did Mr. Cass tell you that I was sitting with your family at the finale?
Yes, my daughter was super excited. She didn't know who Josh was.
Yeah.
But she knew who you were.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, we sat next to your friend and this other weird guy.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, that's the writer. So,
Josh and I, we were sitting in between your family and Andrew Savage's family.
As everyone should say. I mean, there is a sandwich for you between Cass and Savage. A lot goes on in that gray space.
Yeah.
It was clearly the good road to be in.
Yeah.
Right?
Very fun. Very fun. We had a great time sitting out in the audience during that show. It was a really, really fun finale. But let's get into talking about all this, because I'm just, you know, really dying to know your take on this. Steven and I talked about this a lot last night, about Sydney's decision to end up making this flip and voting with the women that are left from Brains and the women that are left from Beauty, and then putting together this women's alliance here at the final 10. And of course, you were a part of this flip at the final 11 in Cagayan, but it's not exactly the same, where it was like you were the one person that flipped between two sides of five. This is a little different. And so just, I would love to get your take on whether you like this move or not.
I like this move. I don't know how it's going to work out for Sydney. I don't know if she can mend that fence with Jason and Scott, but I think for her, it was a great move, because Jason and Scott are kind of excluding her a bit if she felt that uneasy, you know, and those are people she'd been playing with and was tight with, especially Jason. So for her to feel that ill at ease with one of the people she's working with, it was the right thing for her. I love women's alliances. So for her game, I don't know that she could win this anyway. I don't think she's building the bonds that she needs to build across the board. She's got a lot of making up to do right now. If she went with Jason and Scott, she's pretty much excluded the majority of the jury, because then they're going to pick off these women and the Brains. And those three are going to be the, you know, the trifecta of evil if they get to the end together. So I think it was a good move in terms of jury management if she can get to the end, because she's showing she's willing to work with other people.
Well,
so
the conventional wisdom on this is that I have heard, Cass, that flippers never win. And this could be something that really is makes the jury upset with her. Do you buy that at all?
I don't buy that, because she really only flipped on Jason and Scott.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't flip on five people.
Yeah.
So I think my error was I flipped on five people, sent them all to the jury and, you know, let them stew. So her, and then she flipped on Nick, who seems to be taking it rather well.
Yeah.
You know, and knew that he was kind of arrogant and seems to just realize it's a game and they got him, rather than being like, you know, screw Sydney, she did this to me. So I think who you flip on, how you do it, and what the numbers are is critical. So she really only flipped on two people. Nick was never 100% with her. Mm-hmm. Additionally, I think Nick sealed the deal. You know, Sydney wasn't even thinking of a women's alliance till Nick went over and talked to her about it.
Yeah.
They didn't show that was even a seed that was planted among any of the women. Other than back on the Beauty Tribe, we had seen that Michelle and Anna and Julia were interested in that way back when. But Sydney never spoke of that.
Mm-hmm.
So when the guys start accusing her of all people, she thinks, well, shoot, maybe I was making a mistake going with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I should get rid of a guy instead of a female. I feel like Nick just paved the way, you know?
Well, to some degree, I mean, I think that it was a little bit similar circumstances in Cagayan, where there was some talk of the Women's Alliance. And again, this really comes down to depending on whose story you believe in all of this. But from at least how it was portrayed on the show, that Spencer told Tony, hey, this Tony, there's a Women's Alliance happening. And that really made Tony want to act in a way to get rid of Jeffra. What is that? At the final seven, I believe. Is that any sort of similar idea, where this idea of the Women's Alliance ends up becoming this self-fulfilling prophecy here, even though it wasn't quite so much in Cagayan?
Well, I think the reason Jeffra went is we found out she had given a clue, an idle clue, to Spencer at the reward challenge. So it didn't have anything to do with a women's alliance or any threats of that, because we found out that she actually, in the reward in her napkin, had gotten a clue to an idol and she gave it to Spencer. So that was an ultimate betrayal, showing us that she was going to go with Spencer and them, or possibly be swayed. I don't think the Women's Alliance was a factor there, but it's always this mystique in Survivor that there's going to be some great Women's Alliance. And really, how many times has it happened? Like twice?
Not too often. I mean, there was also the looming prospect of it during Cambodia last season, and it didn't come to fruition. But here it actually does come into fruition. And last night I kind of thought that, with talking with through with Steven, I said, okay, well, maybe Sydney is going to bounce back with Jason and Scott. And I rewatched this episode again, and it really seems to me like, I think that Sydney is all in on moving forward with this new alliance of five, and I guess Joe is there as well. Do you think that that is how she sees it? Do you think that she is 100% in on the Women's Alliance, or do you think she's sort of hedging it?
I think she's hedging it, but I think based on the preview for next time on Survivor, that the behavior of Scott and Jason's just going to push her over to the women.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're going to, this treachery they're planning, or vengeance or whatever, not a good thing to do if you're trying to win the game.
I just don't know if she was hedging it. I think last night I felt like she was, but after watching it the second time, the way she's talking about it, it's like, hey, I'm going to make a big move. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But I think I'm better off going with all of these women. I think that that's a better shot for me. And now she has to know they're not going to take this betrayal well, because she was there the whole time in the beginning of the season. She was there for all of the Jennifer stuff, when Jennifer was just talking with Alicia about the idea and how it was an unforgivable sin. She was there and she saw how those guys treated Alicia, right? Don't you think that she has to know that this is basically going to be the end of the road with them based on their behavior in other instances of betrayal earlier in the season?
Yeah, and she was pretty bad at Jason, too. That confessional she had about midway through the show, where she was talking, you know, Jason was kind of calling her out, she was calling him out, and then she mentioned, you know, why can the guys go do this and I can't do this, you know? So maybe she is done with them and dumping them. Maybe that was the snippet we got where she said, you know, I'm never going to be able to relate to these guys. They feel like they can act like this and call people out, but I'm not allowed to question them.
Yeah.
So that, maybe she was fully abandoning. I only watched the episode once.
That's fine. That's not required to watch it multiple times. But I really wanted to make sure that I understood it, because Steven and I spent so much time talking about this last night. And so, you know, I'm not as down on the move for her as I was last night. I didn't hate it, but I felt like that it was a better move for Michelle and Julia than it was for her. In talking to Nick this morning, Nick also said that he was planning on the next round trying to get Sydney out at Final Nine, and also that he found out that people were trying, that Scott and Jason were probably going to get rid of him at Final Eight. And now I know all these other players that, you know, make these plans of like, oh, I was going to get rid of you at this number, and I was going to get rid of you at this number. But the fact that somebody like Nick was thinking about targeting Sydney, does that make you feel like it was a better move? Because for me, it sort of makes it say, okay, well, at least she identified somebody who was coming after her, not at that point, but eventually.
Yeah, I think she knew that Nick was also possibly on the chopping block with Jason and Scott and being used as a number. So maybe she also thought that would leave less peripheral damage afterward than going for, say, Scott or Jason.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if you're going to make a move and Nick's kind of getting on everyone's nerves, and you're going to draw that line in the sand, man, get rid of Scott, who, you know, doesn't have an idol.
Yeah.
And who people seem to be bonding well with. You know, people are liking him. Ty likes him. Julia kind of likes him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not as offensive as some other people seem to be.
The thing, though, with this move that she made, though, that makes me worry about it for her is that, you know, she's flipping with a group has all smaller sub-alliances that are tighter with each other than they are with her, where she is flipping to a group where you have Michelle and Julia, who have a much better relationship with each other than they do with her. Plus, you have Debbie and Aubrey, and don't forget about Joe. So maybe you could say the best case scenario is that she's flipped now going into the Final Nine into either a group of three or a group of four. Where I'm starting to worry for her is, what if Michelle and Julia decide, hey, maybe the best move for us isn't to go with the All Women's Alliance. Maybe we should get back together with Jason, Scott, and Ty at the next vote. And then that's a five. And I feel like that maybe Sydney sort of gave some of her power away where she wasn't really on anybody's radar. And now if those guys are really vindictive, they might be trying to pull votes back over to get rid of Sydney next.
Or Sydney can be in the swing vote position between Michelle and Julia and Debbie and Aubrey.
Mm-hmm.
And Debbie and Aubrey also have Joe, I think.
Yeah.
Even though, was sure. Joe the one who voted for Jason?
No, that was Ty. Ty voted for Jason there.
Oh.
And according to the interviews that Nick has done this morning, he said that it was coming down to that Women's Alliance was trying to decide, were they going to vote for Nick or were they going to vote for Jason? And I think that Ty had gotten in the loop on that. And at one point, again, according to Nick, was that the votes were going to go on Jason. And then Ty never got the memo of, oh, no, the vote is going for Nick tonight. So he sort of hung out to dry, too.
Yeah, Ty's in the same boat as Sydney. So Scott and Jason are going to have to, well, we know they're not going to, but they should control their tempers and go back and say, you know, good one. He was causing trouble around camp and regroup.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they're going to do that. But yeah, I actually assumed it was Joe that was kind of like Keith, like not knowing who to vote for and just writing whoever he felt like.
No, it was Ty.
So
no, the other person that, you know, this is reminiscent of, and Steven and I were touching on this last night, was how Tony would go and he would vote with Spencer and Tasha and Jeremy, and then he would come back and then, you know, Trish would, you know, forgive him and bring him back into the fold. And then again, he would do it at the Jeffra vote and then come back with you guys in his main alliance. And then again, at the final five, when he finally voted against Trish, and then, you know, he felt like he could come back from that as well. Can you talk about how somebody could pull that off in terms of, I mean, was it just a fluke that Tony Vlachos is a unicorn and, you know, he can do that? Or is there sort of a key to be able to vote against your alliance and then get back in good graces with your alliance?
Yeah, you have to have two idols in your pocket, one of which is the super idol.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to flaunt them and wear them and say, haha, you can't vote me out. I mean, that's part of how Tony got to the end is,
yeah,
you know, having these power items and using them and other people saying, yeah, you know, I'll just get rid of whoever this time because I don't want to confront that. So I don't see, I mean, Ty has his idol, but now the people he's betrayed know about it, you know, and he's also mentioned the super idol that nobody knew about.
Yeah.
So I don't think Ty can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Sydney can do that. I think she's going to be very one-track minded about it and say, hey, you guys did this and this is why I did it. And I don't think she's dealing with the same kind of people that Tony was,
mm-hmm,
you know, and Tony was a total bullshit artist. So I don't see Sydney as that kind of person, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think she quite has that charisma or that charm where she's like, yeah, I'm so, like the dog that, you know, pooped on your shoe and is like, oh, but sorry. You know, I don't think see her as that person like I see Tony. Yeah. You know, it's like this kid who keeps getting in trouble and you keep thinking, all right, he's cute, he's harmless. So I don't see Sydney that way. And I think Ty is starting to meddle in everyone's plans and kind of overstating things that he shouldn't be saying.
Yeah, like what he did at tribal council, you mean?
Yeah, like pretty much convincing Julia and Michelle that they don't know what's going on in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So they should get rid of a man.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be in an alliance with someone like that.
With like Ty.
Yeah.
What is it specifically? So, because he is somebody who is slipping up in terms of what information he's giving away?
Yeah. What's he going to say at the next tribal?
Yeah.
You know, that you know, and how does he know about this super idol? Who told him? He's going to have to go back to camp, and he's not a good liar. If you watch the scenes, he gets flustered.
Yeah, so. You're right. That's a really good point about Ty, where, you know, he's a lovable guy, but he does like try to like tell a lie sometimes, or he's like, he get like when they caught him looking for the idol, and I don't even think he actually did lie in that point. I think he should have tried to lie, but he's trying to lie here. He also had another situation about talking about the hidden Community Idol, I think earlier in the season, where he was talking about he didn't know where it was the first time one of the Swap tribes went to Tribal Council. So that's a good point in terms of somebody who is not great on their feet with lying. I mean, what do you do if you are in alliance with that person and then you realize, oh my God, this person is a terrible liar, that they're going to blow everything?
Yeah, then you get very concerned. And if you have the numbers and you have that extra number, you're going to want to get rid of that person.
Yeah.
And then he just voted against Jason. So he can go and say, you know, you guys told me to vote for Jason, so I did, to the other group.
Yeah.
But he's got to know he's on the bottom of that group because he wasn't clued in to the Nick vote. So he's probably in the worst situation.
Yeah.
Heading into next week.
That's really interesting that Ty is a liability to have in your alliance. You know, it's that.
But I love Ty. I love him as a character and, you know, I love everything about him. But
yeah,
that tribal.
I have a question for you that comes from our listeners. And usually I get to these at the end, but I just want to talk about this now. That there was a comparison made between Ty and Keith Nail. Do you see Ty as a very similar player to Keith?
No, I think Ty understands the game and the strategy. I just think his nature is to be truthful, and it's hard for him, you know, whereas Keith, I think he doesn't care. He's going to go with the guys and stick with his crew and not really care about who's making decisions or how they're made. Just tell him what to do. I don't think Ty is that kind of player.
Yeah.
I think he is a player in terms of wanting to be part of strategy and understanding the power of his idol. And, you know, just because he thought he was sticking to a plan doesn't make him a Keith Nail.
Yeah. And that question is from Chris Bragg. I just want to give him credit for that.
I think Joe is more of a Keith Nail.
Okay.
You know.
Why? Because Joe is just sort of like doing his own thing and nobody's really telling him what's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody's bringing up his name. He's just cruising along. He's minimal confessionals. He's just there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not part of any decision making.
Yeah.
He's like Keith Mail meets Rudy.
You know, wow.
It's like a combo.
What a combo.
Oh, but he doesn't have that crotchety charm that Rudy had.
No. He doesn't really have a lot of one-liners, Joe.
Yeah. I mean, I need to see a little more out of him. I mean, he's probably exhausted. So
very tired. And he doesn't have his hearing aids, it sounds like.
But that was awesome. I mean, he's there snoring in the hammock and they're just talking strategy.
Yeah. So then there was another scene last night with Sydney where that Nick goes and confronts Julia and she gets really upset about this, that she feels like that Scott and Jason are checking in on her and they're sending Nick to go talk to Julia, and that really offended her. She ends up calling everybody out in front of the group, sort of in front of Jason and Scott and Nick, and saying like, hey, what do you think? I'm plotting against you. I mean, you better send somebody out there that has a better poker face than Nick, because I can read him like a book. What do you think of that at the final 10? I know that that there were some big confrontations in your seasons, and certainly in Kagyan, where, you know, you're getting into a big blowout with Tony. Do you feel like, is that a smart move on Sydney's part? Or do you feel like that at this point in the game, she should be keeping that a little closer to the vest?
I don't think at this stage she should be confronting in front of everybody, especially when she's in an alliance, you know, and she's feeling somewhat comfortable and supposedly is tight with Jason. Go for a walk. She just accused Nick of walking 20 feet away to talk. Take your number one person and go down the trail 40 feet and have your talk. But blowing it up in front of everyone, I mean, when I did that with Tony and in Kagyan, that was near the end, and it was when I was trying so hard to get Wu to vote out Tony, or at least vote him to flush an idol. And the only way I could get Wu to see that was to get Tony to confess that, you know, he had the super idol and the idol and all that, and he had lied to Wu about, you know, swearing on his family to everyone but Wu. And, you know, I was trying to show Wu, who was there, what was going on with Tony. Wu didn't believe it, even though Tony said it. So there's a time and a place for drawing out, you know, even in Second Chance, when, you know, I walked over with Tasha and Tasha started talking about me and I just threw it out there that she's just lying.
Mm-hmm.
When you know that you've got no other chance, that's when you do that in front of everybody and say, look, here's what's going on. And you try to incite something, cause your chaos as it is, and But at this point, there was no need to do that because she was safely in the middle of two things.
Yeah.
It's when you're sinking that you just say, I'm going to just throw everyone else, you know, overboard with me.
Yeah.
And go out swinging.
Right.
So she's not even in the mix to go out. So why do that other than just a personality type potentially?
Yeah. It did seem like that's more of a last resort move where you really want to start to blow things up. I felt like that she was in a pretty secure position at that point in the game, but it's definitely really did shake things up moving forward for Sydney in that voting block or vote that alliance. Wait, is this voting blocks, Cass?
I don't know. Had production come up with that yet? You don't have to ask Steven where that originated. Ask him which producer asked for that one. I don't think they'd heard of voting blocks.
Yeah, they hadn't heard of them yet. Is that what happened? Did they invent them and they like wrote it down on like a post-it somewhere and then Steven picked it up?
I don't know how it originated because obviously I wasn't privy to the voting block strategy.
Yeah,
I just sat in judgment of it.
Now, so if you're Sydney now, what's the next move for you? Okay, now the next vote is the final nine. And of course, these odd numbers are where things get really crazy. It's actually kind of unusual to have a big swing in Survivor happen on the even numbers, but that's what happened last night. So now going into the final nine, what's the move? Is it to try to take out either Jason or Scott? She has to know that Jason has the idol. So that really does complicate things. And if they have the tie vote, I mean, could we be looking at some sort of a 3-3-3 split with try to flush one of Jason's idols or Ty's idol?
Well, are Jason and Ty going to break up because Ty wrote down Jason's name?
I don't know.
I think it all hinges on when they get back from camp, you know, and it didn't look like Ty was hiding things. It looks like Jason and Scott are the ones, you know, seeking their revenge. So, yeah, I mean, I think she's going to try to get Scott out probably.
Yeah, but just go back to how Scott reacted when Aubrey ended up putting the vote onto Peter after she wrote Julia's name out. Like, how do you think that Scott is going to react when his supposed BFF Ty voted for his other BFF?
Yeah, they're both going to get mad, yeah. Jason and Scott. And that's really poor gameplay.
Yeah.
So what I thought this episode, because they gave a little backstory on both Jason and Scott that we don't usually see, like that Jason has a child who has autism,
mm-hmm.
and that Scott was, you know, takes care of his family. I'm thinking they're probably in the final three and they're trying to soften them up and give us a preview of what they can possibly argue. I don't know why they showed that, especially if next week they're going to go hide all the machetes and pots and stuff.
Well, that's a good question because I wanted to ask you, what do you think was the difference between their two stories and the beautiful story that you heard from Andrew Savage back on Bayon Beach?
I still cry about that. I mean,
Andrew Savage didn't get to the final three.
Yeah, but he's Jeff Probst's best friend and Jeff knows his wife. So they wanted to throw that in there so that Savage would get a little extra loving after that episode.
That's one great friend. I wish I had a friend like that.
Yeah, put it on national TV that, Savage needs some love. I think that was just, I don't know why it was on our season. Well, we were all talking about our families and crying. Savage got that edit that he's the one. But, you know, everybody was emotional that day.
I would suspect that maybe more so than the Andrew thing. It also set up the Andrew doesn't like Steven subplot. I think that advanced that story. And then it also set up the, you know, Jeremy got to have an emotional moment out of that also. So I think it was by proxy also like making Jeremy look good, who was the winner of the season.
Yeah, I also thought it was part of my winner's edit to show that I was getting to know everyone and really bonding. But you see how that turned out. So, but I mean, why would they show that of these two?
It did seem like a weird spot for them.
Yeah, neither of them went to Jeff Probst's wedding, so it's not like that he owes him a, you know, something. So
that was the favor?
No, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. But it made me think, because I've been really watching what they're showing. Like, Jason kind of reminds me of Tony.
Yes.
But they're with Tony, they didn't show a lot of his kind of sexism and, you know, I hate the term bullying, but it's kind of just being aggressive and overbearing at times with people, especially when he felt he was in control.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't show a lot of that they could have had he not won. And we're seeing a lot of that with Jason, where he's outright, you know, making fun of people and doing things. So I feel like he must get to the end and either he's our first villain winner, you know, just really rotten that they're going to show America can happen.
Wait, Tony wasn't a villain winner?
But they didn't show him being really, really some of the choice things he did, you know, yeah, to belittle people and stuff. Whereas Jason, I feel like they're showing. No, I guess Tony was a villain winner, but Tony had the idols. I mean, Tony was just a weird, he's an anomaly, yeah, really.
Unicorn.
He really is. He's totally a unicorn.
But hold on, but let's just pause for 1 second, because is that a thing? Does Survivor, I know we, Steven especially always talks about the winner's edit, but is it a thing to be a final three edit where they make you look good for being in, even in the final three? Like, do they have to show like redeeming moments for you to be in the final three as well?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I overthink this now. I don't want to turn into one of know-it-alls overthinking everything.
Yeah, you don't want that. I mean, I'm just trying to think, you know, in the history of, you know, final twos, final threes, you know, do they always have a redeeming moment for everybody there? I mean, they probably do, but just off the top of my head, I don't know if that's necessarily a thing. Like, I feel like that certainly you could argue last season that Spencer also had his share of moments as somebody in the final three. It's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Interesting question. So I'd love to just get your take on some of these other characters in the season. We spent so much time talking about Sydney in the vote last night. Nick is the person who went home. Were you a fan of his, or was he too much for you?
At first, he kind of reminded me of my good friend Garrett.
Yes.
But I didn't not like Nick. I mean, I felt like every season we have someone who's overconfident and arrogant, but I didn't think he was horrific, mm-hmm, you know, in terms of having confessionals where he's, you know, whining and complaining. He just was feeling very confident, which we get all the time. It's always the person who's the president or, you know, feeling like they're running the show and know everything. Yeah. I didn't think he was playing very well. I mean, I felt like he was being very blatant about taking people aside and, you know, he thought he was the master of reading people, not realizing that people were reading him as well. But I didn't find his personality horrible, as I sometimes find other people's, you know. So, and
that's
I really
like, damning with faint praise, I think, that you didn't find his personality as horrible as you find some other people.
Well, I just watched his Ponderosa, and I really liked him in there, you know, and where he's very self-aware and fun kind of about the whole thing.
Yeah.
So
now Nick describes himself as the mayor of Ponderosa. Now certainly as the queen of Ponderosa, you outrank him. Is that, do you acknowledge Nick as being the mayor of Ponderosa?
Well, I think Nick and Neil need
Nick
to have,
Mayor Mayorano.
I think it would be Neil would be the mayor of Ponderosa.
Well, that
I mean, he wasn't first to arrive, but yes.
Well, I think just in the same way that Columbus discovered America and there were already people here, I think that maybe that's what Nick did, especially that Neil actually, I believe actually that while Neil got voted out first, that it seemed like that Neil went to the hospital, not to Ponderosa, and then Nick actually was there before Neil actually arrived at Ponderosa.
Yeah, that's what I gathered, and I wouldn't want to go to Ponderosa with an infection, because it was pretty, you know, disgusting. So
yeah,
I guess Nick can be the mayor. I mean, if I were Neil, I would just say I was off, you know, on official business and still take my seat. But
right,
that's between them, and they're kind of got an interesting relationship anyway. So
yeah, that was actually very funny, the relationship that they had, being, you know, I think that maybe we've had two seasons in a row where you have an interesting dynamic between the first two people at Ponderosa. I don't think that Nick and Neil, while they're funny, I don't think that they trump the Cass and Savage Ponderosa videos.
Well, we haven't seen Neil call Nick disgusting or insufferable or anything, but you know, we also haven't seen them have their happy hour moment.
Right.
So you never know.
Well, that really did take a weird turn, because it's like, okay, well, these two people are going to hate each other. But then it was sort of like you were more frenemies than anything, it seemed like, by the end.
You know, My charms are many, Rob.
Yeah, you won him over.
Yeah, Savage was a little in love with me by the end of that. I mean, he wanted to feel, once Joe came, you know, then he got his bro on, but we had something special.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like to me watching the Ponderosa video. So really fun one this week, where then Nick is saying that Neil is delusional. Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a thing, though, on Survivor? Especially, it must be very tricky when you are a medevac to say, like, oh, okay, well, this was going to happen, because you just don't know how it was going to play out. You can sort of, like, write whatever ending you want.
Yeah, I'm pretty fortunate on both my seasons to have been able to just leave everything out there in terms of feeling like I did everything I could to stay in the game. So I can't even imagine, you know, you're not voted out. And I understand that if you get an infection near your joint, it can be horrific, because Mr. Cass had that happen in his elbow and he ended up having a PICC line to his heart with antibiotics for weeks. And it was when I was casting for Kagiyan, and I actually found out I was getting on Kagiyan. I was in like Iowa, wherever he was working, and had gotten injured staying with him because he had to be on a daily infection thing, you know, antibiotics. And it, because it got into his bursa, which spreads the blood flow through your body faster.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it kind of looked like, oh, he just got it on his knee, if it gets in that joint, it somehow spreads more quickly through your system.
Yeah.
So when I saw that and they explained it, I was like, oh, yeah, because it can take you out.
Yeah.
So, but it's got to hurt. And I think he definitely has unfinished business in terms of wanting to come back and knowing that Survivor does bring back people who've left because of an injury. So you would naturally have that hope and live in this coulda, shoulda, woulda world. And honestly, the last few winners are people who have found idols, you know, and he had an idol. If you look, so you have Tony, you have Mike, you have Jeremy,
Natalie.
So how many idols do we have in there?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And Tyson had an idol. Cochran, did he have the idol? I don't really remember if Cochran had the idol.
Didn't he win a challenge to get a clue when he got the idol or something?
Malcolm had the idol. And then he may have. I don't recall if he had the idol after Malcolm played it, and then Andrea went home with it, and I'm not sure what ultimately happened. I don't remember what happened after that with the idol. Then Denise never had the idol.
Yeah, but you're going, I'm talking like Malcolm, the last three or four seasons. Now, did Natalie ever get an
idol?
Yeah,
she had the idol.
Okay, yeah. So look at the last, say, four seasons.
Okay, so this is really interesting. You're onto something. So do you feel like the idol so powerful that it makes people win who find it? Or is there something about the people that win Survivor that causes them to be resourceful enough and have the wherewithal to find an idol?
I think it's a combination. I think the people who find idols are extremely focused, you know, on winning the game. And when I talk to people who consider playing a second time or whatever, I always say, don't show up unless you have a one track mind to win Survivor, because I've seen that now in both my seasons with the winners that I've played with, that they were just extremely focused. So if you're focused, you're going to look for the idol. And then having an idol gives you a sense of security that you don't have. So maybe you can stave off your paranoia an extra week or two.
Yeah, that's interesting. So
I think having an idol and being in an alliance are phenomenally helpful. So in the seasons since I've played, everybody's gotten an idol who's won.
Yeah.
So in my Survivor realm, even though I was a huge fan before, and I never got so in depth as I do now into watching and paying attention to things, I feel like an idol in modern Survivor here is crucial.
Wow. You know, and that's a really good point, because when I think about, you know, going back on, if I was ever going to go back, I feel like, I wouldn't go crazy with the idol. I'm not going to be one of these people that's looking for the idol everywhere. So that's all the more reason to stay home, because I don't think I'm the kind of person that's going to go out and find an idol.
You're not going to climb a tree?
Probably not. Look what happened to Ty.
Yeah, I've never been one of the great idol hunters.
Yeah.
And mostly because now people are suspicious of me no matter what I do. So.
Right.
I'm going to sit in that shelter and not talk to anyone.
Well, I know what happened to poor Steven, that, you know, he was going to go look for the idol. Everybody's like got really pissed off at him.
Yeah, Steven should have known better.
Yeah. Well, you were there. Did you? You were very suspicious of Steven?
He was a bit of a spaz in the early days.
but lovable.
Stephen and I are both lucky we were on that Bion that won the initial immunities,
yeah.
You know,
well,
in
that's,
second chance.
That's another thing that you have in common with Nick. I don't know what we established was the first thing you have in common with Nick, but you guys both went a very long time without going to tribal council and then end up going home on your first tribal council. I mean,
it was technically my second tribal in second
chance. You're right. You're right. I'm sorry. I apologize about that.
But yeah, there are definitely, now I've played twice. The first time I think I went to tribal, the only person who's been to more tribals than me in a season is Denise.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time I went to two tribals and I had just winning rewards and, you know, having fun basically rather than scrapping my way through.
Yeah.
So, definitely two different perspectives on the game when you're winning and getting rewards and with people that you enjoy, versus, you know, being the bottom of the barrel the whole season.
Yes, I'd love to get your take on Debbie because, like yourself, she's been such a unique character on this season. Are you a Debbie fan?
You know, I was a Debbie fan, I think, the first two episodes. And I love her, you know, as a character. And I think she's probably a great person to go have a glass of wine with and hang with. I think she's being a little too confrontational out there when we saw her go up to Ty, last week, and mm-hmm. say we're in alliance. And that's another thing where you see that Ty doesn't know how to lie or cover on his feet. You know, I think she went a little bit over the top at one point for me. And just the way that they're kind of making fun of her, showing her with all her different jobs every episode mm-hmm. and showing her swinging from trees. And I like that personality and I think she'd be fun to be out there with, but I don't see her as a winner.
Yeah.
But as a character, I mean, I really feel like when they cast myself and Trish in Kagyan, they went with not the I'm married to a professional sports player, I have fake boobs, just kind of like normally middle-aged women. Mm-hmm. They kind of got back to that they hadn't had for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just because we're like over 40 doesn't mean we don't have personalities and stuff. So I love Debbie for that. I think she's a great character, much like, I guess, when I step out of it, I see myself like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm super happy that they're casting this over 40 woman, not as a dowdy housewife, but as a dynamic person, you know, who I see Debbie as.
Yeah.
I don't see her winning this season, but I definitely see her returning. And she's good at confessionals, although sometimes I feel like they're a little bit forced with some of the things that are said. But she's funny. And I think she's fun and I like her. I thought she did really well in the early game. To me, there's just two sides to the game. It's pre-merge and post-merge. So once you get to the merge and the jury starts, it's a whole new game. So I'm kind of really watching how people are behaving. You know, if they got to the end, do they have votes? What's mm-hmm. going to happen? So I don't see her winning the game,
but
I like her.
Do you feel like that there are styles of play that are better for the pre-merge and for the post-merge?
Definitely.
What are they?
Well, and I think it depends on who you are. You know, if you're Debbie, you need to lay low pre-merge, not screw up in a challenge so that you're they can easily place blame on you if you're one of the older people. And then when you get to the merge, I mean, I think as an older woman, I think Kimmy played it perfectly in Second Chance. You have to play the game that can get you to the end.
Mm-hmm.
So for everyone, it's different, you know. But for the older woman, you can't take charge. You can't piss people off. It's just not going to fly because you're going to be around a bunch of 20 and 30 somethings who have a lot of ego. And, you know, you have to understand how to deal with them. The world's not ready for, a Debbie winner.
Debbie Wanner.
Yeah, but I love her. I like her a lot. You know, I like her loyalty. I like that she's pretty badass. So, yeah.
Do you feel like, though, the way that she's been very aggressive in terms of the post-merge game where she says, hey, everybody else is playing defense. I'm playing offense out here. I'm going to be the person that goes up to Ty and say, hey, Ty, OK, you're in the alliance now. Do you feel, is that Tony like in your mind at all?
No, Tony would send Trish to do his work.
Ooh.
Well, actually, Tony didn't do the work. Tony just freaked out and then went to Spencer, who would just go with Tony because he was kind of awe-stricken by him, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So
how could you not be?
I was awe-stricken, but in a different way. Like, I need to get this Yahoo out of here. But clearly nobody we wanted to do that.
Yeah.
So, I just don't see, a Debbie win, but I like her and I'm sure we'll see her again.
Yeah. Now, Debbie was one of the people on the new Brains Tribe, which they had big shoes to fill after the original Brains Tribe, or Crap for Brains Tribe, as they've been called by somebody. And so we had this new group, which it did look at first like they had their act together more, but then they too had their flaws, and then they've been seemingly completely compromised by infection.
Yeah, and they're on the Takeo Beach, I think, yes. Was their beach, which is where I spent most of my survivor time.
Did you feel sort of like, oh, I'm home, this is Brains Beach?
Yeah. You know what I think with this medical this year is they have a new medical team that mm-hmm. started here with, have you guys gone over this?
No.
It's not Dr. Ramona anymore. It's a guy named Dr. Joe and his crew. And I think the old doctor had so many years of experience and would just, whenever she saw you, tell you, you know, you better be drinking water. Let me see any open wounds. I don't know if it's because it's a new player season and they're just not taking care of themselves, or if medical's not really hammering it home to them how important it is to take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a combination of the two, having new players who just think, oh, it's just a little cut. And then like the dehydration situation with Caleb, that's totally preventable. Mm-hmm. You know, people need to drink water out there. So yeah, I think this season, it's not that the beach is any more dangerous than it was when Second Chances was there. It's just the experience that medical probably gained and that the players brought with them.
Yeah.
Because we all get cut. Everybody who ever plays Survivor has some sort of scar from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just whether you're actually tending to that.
Yeah. Mine are emotional, Cass.
Yeah. I'm kind of over. I don't know. Second Chance is just cleared it up for me.
It healed you?
It feels like this is the first time I'm rewatch. Like I can watch Survivor without being upset or, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a different vibe where I'm back to being a fan and enjoying this cast. And I'm really enjoying the season and the cast, which I haven't done since Kagyan.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I can be a Survivor fan again. So Second Chance did that for me.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
So you played in Kagyan and then also, which is the Philippines, and then also in Cambodia. Were the conditions that much harder in Cambodia than they were in the Philippines?
Well, no, I thought Cambodia was easier for me, but I only lasted, 19 days.
What about the heat? Was it that much hotter? Was that much more humid?
I thought it was very similar. I mean, you got to remember in Kagyan, we had Jatia throw our food out and our tribe was just a hot mess there at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were like 3 days where we just didn't eat straight. So, I mean, I lost 22 pounds there. I lost, I think, 10 in Second Chance. So, to me, I thought Cambodia was easier, but then I was winning too. I had Joe with me the whole time. So we were winning and I was eating and I didn't think it was, and we had more food in the sea. It was easy to just walk out and get clams and snails. So I thought it was easier. Of course, I went to Ponderosa before the big rains came that like 6 day stretch they had where, Steven turned into Kaiser Sose going out to poop in the woods every hour.
Kaiser's? Why is that like Kaiser Sose?
That's what Abby called him because I guess his feet were bugging him and he went kind of limping into the woods and she started calling him Kaiser Sose.
Wow, that's a pretty good reference from Abby Maria.
Yeah, well, you know, the language barrier.
Yeah. You know, when I was with Abby Maria last week, it was very funny that we did the podcast in person at the studio for Podcast One, and then when we were coming out, then we saw Larry King, and Abby Maria is a big Larry King fan.
What?
Yeah.
I would see Kimmy Kappenberg as a Larry King fan. No, I would Abby. Not see Abby Maria.
Abby loves Larry King.
I actually talked to Abby after she did your podcast.
Yes. And what did she say?
I said, we talked about Larry King mostly. She said it was a lot of fun and she happened to be drunk when we were talking.
Yes.
But she said Larry King had a really big head. Because I said, doesn't he have a big head? She goes, he does. And I said, is he Mr. Burns? And she said, yes, I think he is Mr. Burns from The Simpsons. So we've decided he's Mr. Burns.
Abby has so many references down. The guys are so saying Mr. Burns.
So, and isn't it wonderful that Abby and I talk?
Yes, that is fun.
Like the fact that we stay in touch is hilarious to me.
Yeah. Well, ever since that, when you guys went up on the stage together and hugged in the audience, it was like a match made in heaven.
Yes. Jeff Probst bringing people together.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Jason and his game, because you said you compared him a little bit to Tony, which is interesting because he compared himself to Russell, and there were so many Tony and Russell comparisons during his season. Do you feel like that Jason is in a decent spot to be able to turn this thing around now? Or do you feel like that, because even if he gets to the final three, if this women's alliance holds, then there's no way he should be able to get to the final three based on the numbers of there's five women left and only four men.
Well, historically speaking, a women's alliance is not going to hold.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see him getting to the end. I don't see him winning. So I think he can get through. If he can forgive Ty for the vote, which I think Jason's probably more forgiving than Scott on these things,
mm-hmm.
which is ironic because Scott took Alicia to task over writing down his name.
Yeah.
You know, and now Scott's doing the same thing too. I'm sure he's going to be pissed. But what happens out there is these big guys, they feel like the women can't take care of themselves. And if they're going to come back to camp and hide the stuff, they're going to piss off the jury, if they're planning to get them there,
mm-hmm.
by hiding all this. And, you know, what good's going to come of it? So I don't know with Jason what's going to happen. Can he pull Sydney back in? Can he forgive her?
Yeah. You know, I typically don't like to go too far ahead in terms of what's going to happen. But OK, so let's just, you know, play this out. And who knows exactly if it goes down this way. So Jason and Scott end up getting really pissed about stuff, and they decide to some degree to sabotage the camp. Now, you live through, obviously, Jatia going ahead. Oh, you're going to vote me out. She takes all the rice and throws it in the fire. How do you manage, and you guys kept her around too after that, how do you manage to live with somebody who is potentially sabotaging and destroying the camp?
Well, in Survivor, somebody is always sabotaging your game, so it's just the camp stuff. But I'm just wondering how it's going to work out if they do that, if they're going to completely alienate themselves. And then are they going to get with Ty and use the super idol to save one of them?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of fallout from this episode.
Yeah. Do you think, though, if the cast doctrine is when your back is against the wall, create chaos, do you feel like are they following your rule book?
Yes, that would be the chaos cast doctrine.
Yes.
For sure. But is their back really against the wall, or do they have the chance to pull in Sydney and say, hey, we get it. You know, he was being condescending and arrogant and, yeah, I don't know how they're going to. I don't like that preview. It's skewed my thinking.
But does that strike you as a move that these guys might make where say, hey, Sydney, we get it. You know, heat of the moment. Come back to us and let's, you know, move forward together. Because I kind of feel like these guys are going to be a little scorched earth with this thing.
Yeah, they're going to be a lot. But remember, 3 days is a long time in this game.
Yeah.
And they're going to come back and have their tantrum. Who knows? Maybe they go hide everything while the girls are out, fishing or something.
Right.
And then they decide to go put it back.
You know, that's a really great point.
It could be a big red herring.
Yeah.
We're going to do this, but they don't.
Right. We always talk about on these podcasts, like, oh, okay, well, this happened, so obviously this must happen next week. But just even going back to my own Survivor experience, we're back in the Amazon where I made a flip on my own. And again, that was at final seven as opposed to final 10. And Jenna and Heidi, the, you know, two people who were BFFs, who, had a lot of choice words for me after that, we voted together on the next vote and voted out Christy, who was the swing vote at the very next vote. So you're right. A lot can change in just 3 days on Survivor.
Yeah, and what's going to happen, what's going to change it is who goes on a reward together, because you know that always messes with everybody's head. And what happens with these two idols and the super idol potential?
Yeah.
You know, so there's so many unknowns, but you know what happens out there is you get in these blow-ups and somebody does something like that, and the next day some other major thing happens because people just behave badly, especially to me, the key mark where people start to like lose it, get paranoid and act like their true worst person is around 21 days.
Yeah.
So I think we're heading into that. We're getting out of the doldrums of the post-merge 6 days where everyone still had, you're still snacking on the last of the cheese and crackers or whatever. And you're going to get back to starving and back, get your head back in the game. And this flip certainly is going to force everyone to do that. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Michelle and Julia.
Yes.
Because I don't know how tight they are.
I think they're pretty tight. I think it seems like that's the case. I mean, especially now with Nick gone. I mean, I think that there was a question of, oh, are Nick and Michelle working together to some degree? And is Julia doing her own thing with Jason and Scott? At this point, we can safely say Michelle is not working with Nick. And you could safely say that Julia may not be super tight with Scott and Jason, considering that she voted against them.
Right.
Or at least voted against Nick.
Yeah, and if they can explain away why they voted Nick, that he was just playing both sides.
Yeah.
You know, and if the guys are receptive to that, it changes the game, but it doesn't. Yeah, that preview, I don't know why they showed it. It's probably a red herring.
Yeah, I don't know, but I do feel like that maybe Julia and Michelle are the people, if that Scott and Jason could pull them back over to their side, like I do feel like that they have still a shot in this thing.
Yeah, definitely.
And I feel like that's more likely than for Sydney to come back, that I kind of feel like that those guys burn a bridge with her after this vote happens.
Yeah, and maybe Sydney burns that bridge too.
Yeah, that's very possible. We saw how she was with Nick, that it could turn into a huge blow. I mean, we saw how those guys were with Alicia. We see how Sydney was on this episode. Yeah, that could be a really combustible situation.
Yeah, and who gets credit for this flip, really? Is it Sydney or is it Michelle and Julia as well? Like, the focus is on Sydney, but, you know, Michelle and Julia could have just as easily made this happen with Joe.
I would give the credit to Sydney here, but as I was saying on the know-it-alls last night, I feel like that this really opens up a lot of doors for Michelle and for Julia. But I would love to get your take on this move from their perspective and whether you like it a lot for them or you think it doesn't change that much.
I think it's great for them because they were seen as in the middle, you know, the brains recording them. Braun thought they had them. And they didn't really piss anybody off because Braun hasn't been very forthcoming with their plans. They're just kind of dictating what to do. And you have these kind of alpha males in Jason and Scott. And I don't consider Ty part of beauty anymore. I feel like with his idol and his connection with Scott and knowing about the idol, that Ty is in with Braun in terms of his alliances. So I think it's a great move for Michelle and particularly for Julia. I mean, Julia's in a great spot. That exile that she had to go live in is probably the best 3 days of her game, you know, for her future, because she got to stay out of the backlash. And, you know, we saw Anna get voted out. So she's kind of not considered a beauty because of the exile. So it's pretty interesting. Yeah. Now that I think about it.
I did feel like she had a very odd quote last night where we saw Scott talking about how he takes care of his mom and he was talking about, you know, what it's like for him and how why he went into basketball, but he takes care of his family. And after that, we saw Julia talk about how she feels like she has a really tight relationship with Scott. But I felt like that was so odd to have that in the episode, especially on a week where she didn't vote with him and then also didn't seem to have any sort of pause about, oh, I don't know if I could do this to Scott. Don't you think that was sort of peculiar?
It did stand out to me. And that's why I think our final three is Jason, Scott, and Julia.
Jason, Scott, Julia.
I don't know how it happens, but I'm hoping Julia wins because I'm in a survivor pool and it's a random draw. And I had Darnell and Julia is all I have left in the race, but that's just because I want my $200.
Wow. You play in a high stakes survivor pool?
All or nothing.
Wow.
Well, we all put in $20. We each get two players.
Wow.
So winner takes all.
So you mentioned a final three here, but I wanted to take your temperature on a final two in this season, because of course that's what happened in the original Brains versus Beauty versus Braun, which you may or may not be salty about, that there is a final two in that season and not a final three.
I don't think they're worried about a Chaos Cast winning, so I think they'll do a final three.
You know, I wanted to tell you that, so I have a picture in my office that was made for me when we did a Rob is a Podcast roast a couple of years ago, and one of our listeners, Molly Shock, put something together, which is the Survivor third place loser club And it has a picture of all of the third place finish, not these people that are in the final three and get no votes, the people who are real third place finishers. And, you know, this was made right before Survivor Kagayan. I think this was like January 2014. And so, yeah, you are the only person. I need like a Polaroid of you to tape onto the third place loser collage that I have.
You can just print that picture I texted you, throw it right on there.
Great. That's what I'll do. No, it's very nice, though. I'll post a picture of it on the website, and then we can add you to it as well. But so I wanted to ask you, so you had a final two in your season, which was kind of a surprise to you guys, right? It seemed like it was on the show.
I think at about final five or six, we kind of figured it out, just counting the days back.
So do you remember the numbers? Because I believe here now we're at the final nine in this season, and it's day 22. Do you know, are we on a similar track? Do I have to be like Andrew Savage and jump on the Survivor Wiki?
Oh, let's see. Day 22, Andrew Savage knows about Survivor Wiki.
Yeah, well, that's why he said he didn't trust Steven, because he read on the Survivor Wiki that Steven was one of the biggest villains, and he played very strategically, and he was a mastermind.
Really?
Yes. That was why he had to target him.
Didn't he know Steven couldn't open an avocado?
Hey, doesn't mean he's not a mastermind.
Or play sand volleyball.
Sand volleyball. Okay.
As opposed to beach.
So Cass, I have this open, the Survivor Wiki, which is a great resource to me. In episode number 8, Morgan got voted out on day 22, which is exactly where we are right now, where Nick got voted out in the 8th episode on day 22.
Ironic. I was thinking they would be a great couple.
Nick and Morgan?
Yeah.
Why? What do they have in common?
Their undying love of themselves and all things beautiful.
Yeah, they're both from the beauty tribe. They're both representatives of the beauty tribe.
Yeah. I just thought that. I was like, oh, maybe Morgan should date
Well,
Nick.
See, well, now Morgan said that one of the reasons why you didn't like her was because you were jealous of her. And now I feel like maybe she was right, Cass.
I'm not jealous. I mean, I just think that they would be a beautiful couple and they could have beautiful babies that
Nick and Morgan. Okay.
With great hair and facial hair and all that. Not Morgan, Nick.
All right. Well, I'm shipping, you want to call them Norgan? Nergan?
Norgan?
What do you like?
Moronic? Morgonic? You like that one? Sorry.
Yeah. I think it probably would have to be Morgonic if you really wanted to be a stickler about it.
Morgonic, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I just got the Sister Nino chuckle. I feel privileged.
Yes. So, yeah, I think that we're on track for the final two here.
Do you?
I think it's more likely than unlikely at this point.
You're probably right, you know.
Because we had 18-person season.
Survivor Wiki, yeah.
We have 18-person season. We have where Caleb is the medevac and then Alicia gets voted off in that episode. Whereas in the original Brains versus Brawn versus Beauty, you have where Cliff gets voted out. And then the next episode, Lindsay quits. And then Alexis still gets voted off in that episode. And even though we had the Neil medevac, they didn't vote somebody off in that episode. So that just counts as the Sarah boot. And then so here we are down to the final nine. With just how many episodes to go? 3, 4, 5, and then the finale. Boom.
Wow. We may have another member of the final three club. You're right.
Yes. So I might have to add a second picture to the wall of the great bronze medalist we would have won if we would have just been in the finals group.
At least I can always say that, unlike some other Brains tribe members.
Yeah. Okay. What about Joe? Poor Joe. Where do you think he ends up? Is he just going to be, you know, in this down to the wire now and nobody's ever going to talk about him? Or do you think that he's out sooner than later?
He's our Keith Nail. He can hang in till final six, final five is my guess.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like Keith Nail to me. He's the Keith Nail for sure.
Yeah.
In terms of not being a key player in decision making, not really caring to be a key player in the decision making.
Yeah.
And just being there. So he's going to be there for a while. And, you know, unless something he asks to go, or I don't see anyone getting rid of him. He's not been a swing vote. He's not been a power player. And when you get to the merge, you're not really worried about those people. You're kind of more worried about the threats. He's certainly not going to win immunity.
Yeah, I just don't know what's going on with him. I feel like that he has no chance to win.
It's like if my father-in-law were playing.
How so?
I just see, I mean, they're like the same age and just, I mean, this is a fast-paced game and your body just breaks down. I can't even imagine. He's like 30 years older than me. I can't even, you know, I can't even contemplate playing in my 70s.
All right, well, maybe one day that... Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not playing after like 52, I think, would be my cutoff age.
That's your cutoff. Okay.
I don't know, unless I could get a ukulele and just pull a Sonya and come back and just be Batty, or Wanda, just come in singing.
To be fair, I don't know if Wanda was that old. I feel like maybe
she just had traditional
values.
In past times?
I think so. I think I'd be surprised. We'll have to check out what the over-under was on Wanda. I feel like that she was probably younger than 50.
Oh, really?
If I had to guess. That might be... All right, if I'm on the...
Where's our Survivor Wikipedia?
What do you say? You say she was over 50?
I say over.
Okay. All right, so Wanda, this is a great trivia question. How old was the great Wanda Shirk? She was, well, I don't know if she really wants us outing her in terms of when this goes. Yeah. So she was born in 1949. So I think you had it. I think
I think she was 51 when she played.
Okay. Wow. That was pretty close though.
Oh no. How old was she?
What
season was she on?
Well, actually, she's 66 now, 66 years young now. And she was on Palau, which I believe aired in the beginning of 2005. So you're right, 51.
Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. But yeah, very, very close. But yeah, so she's still, not even, she's not approaching Joe's age.
No, they've never had a 70-year-old woman on there.
No, not yet. You could be the first one.
Oh my God. Well, Jeff will be dead by then.
You don't know that.
So I might have a chance to win without him, you know. Can you imagine me walking out at like 70 and Jeff being there at 80 because he's 10 years older than me and being like, get off, cat! And me just flipping him off, pushing my
glasses
off.
You are underestimating the advances that will be made in medicine in the next 30 years. That Jeff Probst will look better in 30 years than he does now.
He already looks better than he did, you know, during Rock and Roll Jeopardy, so... Who knows?
Yeah. You may look like Morgan in 30 years.
Oh my God. There's something to aspire to.
Yeah.
I'm going to reverse age like Jeff does.
You're going to come back in 30 years. You'll be on the beauty tribe in Brains versus Brawn versus Beauty 19.
There you go. Oh my God. Is this show going to last that long?
You know
what? They'll just do it like, you know, the 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds, 70-year-olds.
Yeah, that'll be a season.
Legends.
Legends. Legends. All right. Let me jump into some of these questions that I have for you. I have so many questions for you from the listeners of Rob as a Podcast. And why don't we go with Dave Backer wants to know, what's the best way to deal with the overly cocky players like Jason and Nick? I thought that Debbie had a interesting thought when she voted. She said that overconfidence is the same as weakness.
Well, then you want to keep your weak players with you.
Oh, so you say keep around overconfident players.
I think post-merge, if someone's grading on someone else and not doing well socially, as long as they're not a physical threat to keep winning immunities, and they're not in a great alliance, keep those guys.
Yeah. I mean, for Debbie, you can understand that, you know, they were trying to vote her out. So I don't think that she had a lot of leverage to be able to decide who was staying and who was going on that vote. But I do think that's an interesting idea in Survivor, that overconfidence is a weakness.
Well, it definitely has been shown to be that. We always get that confessional where, you know, I'm safe, I feel great. And that's the one who gets blindsided.
Yeah.
It's almost a staple.
Well, to that point, that Jason has a secret scene this week. I don't know how much you watch these confessionals and secret scenes that are on the CBS website and the CBS YouTube. But that Jason is talking about how, like, he's like, you know, we've got this 7-person alliance and it's the tightest alliance that has ever been made. And we got this perfect thing going down to the final 7. And he's really talking about how there's no chance anybody is flipping. And, you know, sure enough, like this 7-person alliance is not as solid as you think it is.
Yeah. I mean, a 7-person alliance, really? When you started on 6-member tribes, what are you? Math, please. Yeah, it's bad when you say that. We have a 7-member alliance when we're final 7.
Yeah.
That's all you're thinking at this point, right? Is, okay, I got to get through the next couple votes and then regroup. But final 7 with that many brawn with Ty, you don't want that. They would have 4.
Yeah, he was ready to lock it in.
Yeah, maybe he's not seeing far enough ahead. But there is a benefit to playing day to day, too.
Yeah.
If you can stay on your feet and not hide machetes and pour ricin fires.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that might have been a secret scene to show that he doesn't have as much control in the game as he thinks, which we obviously know now. But with that super idol, I mean, that super idol can flip things around. If he and Ty decide, let's just go to the end, and if one of our names comes up, we promise we're going to play it together.
Yeah.
You know, but I can see Ty falling into the dreams and, you know, like promising that to give the car and not do, you know, I'll vote for you. And I can see that happening to Ty with Jason, where they make this pact that they're going to use the super idol on either of them. And then it comes time and Ty's name comes up and Jason just looks at him like, eh.
Yeah,
but I don't
funny.
See Ty doing that, you know. Yeah.
You know, with this super idol, now you played with Tony, who had the super powered idol. Do you like this idea of splitting it between either 2 idols or 2 people? Obviously, yeah, you could have a scenario like Jeremy last season who has both of the idols. But do you like this twist where 2 people have to use their idol at the same time?
I think it's a futile twist. It's kind of like stealing a vote. I don't think anyone's going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you, Rob, half my idol to save you.
Yeah.
Because then everyone knows we're working together and then they're going to split the vote between us next time.
But you know what? I feel like that there could be a scenario where it ends up being used. And if I go back to that first vote after the merge in Kagyan, where Tony played his idol for LJ and then LJ played his idol for Tony. Like, I kind of feel like that. I don't even know if each of them knew they had an idol at that point, and I don't think they did, but that could be a scenario where you have 2 people in the same alliance who both have an idol. And it's just like, okay, well, whatever person the other side votes for, let's just use the super idol on them.
But now if people know about the super idol and they do a vote split, and they tell them we're vote splitting the votes, they're both going to want to play their idol for each other. You just split the vote between the 2 of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And you tell them that they can't super idol it. They're going to have to each play it individually.
Well, isn't the super idol, can you use that after the votes are read? Isn't it the same like the Tyler Perry idol? So could you just see where the votes end up going and then play that super idol after?
Yeah. But say I'm Aubrey, who I really like her this season. So if I find out what the super idol is and I say, all right, guys, we're going to split the vote between you 2 because we want to get rid of this super idol. So you can both play your idol tonight or you can gamble on who it's going to be. That's going to put the paranoia into both Jason and Ty. Mm-hmm. And you have to play your normal idol before the votes are read. That's the kicker. So if I go to you and say, we're voting for you 2 because I don't know which one of you has an idol, and then you flush their idols and the super idol all at once.
Yeah, but if I'm either Jason or Ty and I feel secure in my alliance, I mean, there could be that dream scenario that you mentioned before where it's like, okay, Ty, let's just whoever it is tonight, we'll just use the super idol. And then if it's Ty and Jason's like, yeah, I'm good. I'm just not going to give you my half of the idol or my half of the super idol. Then Ty could get screwed. But I feel like you could still, if you had enough confidence in your alliance, you could play it out that way too, right?
Yeah, but these people don't have confidence. I think only Scott and Jason have this super tight bond. And I think Ty and Scott I think Scott's going to join our third place club the more I think about it.
Okay. Oh, we will welcome him with open arms. He will be the tallest member by far.
He can change the light bulbs.
You know, and you brought up Aubrey, and that's a great point. I wanted to ask you about Aubrey. So what is it that you're liking about Aubrey this season?
I just like her. I mean, I just, you know, I like the brains. You know, I like to have a brain to root for, and I like Aubrey. She just seems really smart, and like she gets it. Socially, she's doing well, I think. You know, and they clearly think she's a threat. I don't think she can win. I'd love to see her win.
Why do you think she can't win? Because she's down in the numbers?
Yeah, and she's down in the numbers, and she's seen as a threat to mm-hmm. where Michelle and Julia were already willing to vote her out.
Yeah.
You know, and that's never a good place to be.
Now, I feel like in this season, like it's still a thing. Okay, these people are brains. These people are beauties. I don't feel like it was as much in the original Brains versus Brawn versus Beauty. How much of a detriment do you think it is to be cast on the Brains tribe? And do you think that that follows you into the merge?
Well, I think for Brains versus Beauty versus Brawn 3, every brain should be like, well, a brain's never won. You know, it's not like we're killing it out here. So we're our own worst enemy. I think this cast is pretty, they're embracing their stereotypes pretty well. I don't think the beauty is, I guess it's just the brawn that's really saying we're the jocks and we're going to stuff them in lockers and all that.
Yeah.
But interesting things I saw about Aubrey in the episode last night. She did have a little confessional at the beginning where she was talking about how it was like high school. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, eventually the misfits get revenge was one of her quotes. And then after the reward challenge, Jeff said, you know, Julia clearly made the right choices. And then they cut immediately to Aubrey crying and having a, you know, a confessional about bad choices, you know. And I thought that was interesting to show that juxtaposition where Jeff's specifically stating Julia made great choices and then Aubrey saying, I'm just making bad choices. Like they didn't have to show us that.
Yeah.
So, and you know, Jeff never says anything positive about women. So for him to say that a woman made a good decision, I don't know. Did they edit that? Do they have a voice double for him? I don't know.
Well, I'm happy to hear that you're really pro Julia. I feel like that I've heard more people the last couple of weeks be more pro Michelle.
I think Michelle's in a bad position now because I think she was with Nick with the brawn and she was with them longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to feel more betrayed by her. As a whole, you know, Scott feels that Julia owes him for saving her, but additionally, Aubrey saved her. A lot of people saved Julia. So if Julia plays her cards right, you know, she, because remember, Aubrey wrote down another name, wrote down Julia and then crossed it out and wrote Peter. So in effect, saved her. So Julia kind of owes everyone. And she could say, well, you know, Nick was kind of being a jerk and I wasn't clear and we hadn't checked in with each other.
Okay.
So I like Julia. I want a woman to win this. I don't see Michelle winning. I don't know. I don't think she's gotten enough of these one-liners like making good choices or, you know, winning immunity or anything.
Ben Dubs wants to know who is in the best position to win the game. Do you think it's Julia?
Yeah, I think right now, and that's partially because I really want her to for my pool winnings, but you know, she got that reprieve from the game, and I think that was huge for her.
Yeah.
So, and she's kind of in the middle of everything, but not being controlling about it.
Thomas Forsey wants to know, whose comments were more damning? Nick's confessional about being arrogant, but it's okay to be arrogant, or Sarah's confessional about being the president?
God, I think they were equally... it's always whoever says something like that goes home, right? It says, I feel totally safe. I'm not going to play my idol. I feel, you know, this alliance is tight. Yeah. I think it's six of one, half dozen of the other.
Who was the president more, Sarah or Dr. Peter Obama?
I still think Sarah was a pretty good president because it wasn't in her outward personality around camp like Peter and Nick.
Yes.
It was a confessional president. So she was a little more diplomatic. So she's definitely more political about it.
Okay. Tyler Sloan wants to know, during the confessional in the water between Sydney and the two beauties, I thought for sure, based on Michelle's confessional about Nick being an ally, that she would go straight to Nick and let him know what was going on. And the vote would flip to Sydney to go home. I want to know from Cass, How aware are you in the moment about the vulnerability of a move against a power alliance immediately backfiring on you to where it's not just that you might not get the numbers, but that the vote might send you home? How aware are you about something like that happening in the moment?
Well, I think usually when you make a when I made my decision in Kagyan, I knew I was on the bottom in the other place. And I knew these little factions had gone off. And I knew the other alliance I was going to had Tony and Trish and all these people who were just, you know, potentially not likable and would implode because of their personalities. And I knew Tony and LJ were both alphas. So you have to weigh all that. Are Scott and Jason ever going to have a tiff? You know, and who had the confessional today saying they'd rather, you know, make a move and go out than just stand back? I thought I saw that. Or was that last week?
Was it Sydney?
Maybe it was Sydney. She had a lot. So, you know, I don't know how you're thinking. I mean, it depends where you think your position is. And this is when the paranoia sets in. After day 21, things are settling in. You get your merge boot. You get rid of the first person. You feel like you've won. And then you're like, why did that person go? Because they were totally not a threat, but we made it out. You know, I don't know what each of them are thinking. I think Michelle probably had the most to lose with that. Because mm-hmm. Sydney can go and bond. I think she's already kind of bonded with Debbie, right?
She definitely had that moment with her, I think, right after the swap the first time around. Mm-hmm. And then last week you had Michelle talking about, well, I'm not really crazy about Debbie. So I do think that there is a little bit of a relationship there.
Yeah, so I think, and then Debbie went, you know, told Sydney how great she did in the challenge and stuff. So I think Michelle is probably going to be most affected by this flip mm-hmm. in terms of where she's standing and being kind of more on the bottom, because Julia has been saved by Aubrey. Sydney is bonded with Debbie, kind of. Yeah. And Joe's in there. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're actually thinking when they make this decision. I mean, you talk in these confessionals and you kind of run through everything because you can voice it to someone, you know, who's not affected by the game mm-hmm. in terms of production. So you're kind of just airing out, going through what you're thinking in your mind. So that could just be a snippet from there where she's just discussing her plans with production. You know, how serious she was when she made up her mind. It could have been at Tribal after Ty did his super idol yeah. information. That could have very well made her say, you know what, we need to go with the girls. Mm-hmm.
Kevin Cray wants to know, at your recommendation, Cass, I read the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and I loved it. What aspects of it do you think apply most to Survivor?
Ooh, well, you know, I didn't really read the whole thing.
Why not?
I never got to the part about avoiding conflict, I think, was my problem. How to deal with people who don't like you. I didn't quite get there.
Yeah.
You know, I think the gist of the book is to just listen to people and be nice. You know, mm-hmm. It's no great secret. It's
you started book. Off good. Everybody said that you really, it was like a Kumbaya Cass or Casanova.
Yeah, Casanova was going. I actually did fine until day 19, and that's when my game exploded.
Yeah.
Because you know, someone had a grudge, and I didn't have the numbers. You know, that early SWAT, the early merge mm-hmm. Would have been great for my alliance over there, because we would have probably gotten rid of Savage.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would have been in great shape, but we didn't have the numbers, and Savage was mad, and Tasha saw the opening to get in with her male alliance that she was with and, you know, plant some seeds. And so, yeah, that was the end of that. But it's fine. I'd rather go out and be the queen of Ponderosa.
Yes.
Than go out on night 38.
Yes. Well, yeah. You've done both.
Having been in both places, if you're not going to win Survivor and you don't need the extra $30,000, $50,000, just go sit at Ponderosa and drink your rum and Cokes and flip people off at Tribal Council, you know, because it's really not worth staying there and suffering for an extra, you know, nominal amount of money.
Mm-hmm. Jeremiah Yap wants to know, Cass, do you think that any of the brains left in the game can tie or place better than your original third place finish? Who do you think has the best chance to do so out of those three? Do you think, Cass, there is a brain out there that could beat your record for highest advancing brain in a brains versus brawn versus beauty season?
I don't see it this season. Mm. I think that I like Aubrey and I think she's playing great, but I just don't see a path to the end without an idol for her. they need to get rid of those two idols. And
well,
I feel,
go back to Neil last week. If you were Aubrey, would you have been really pissed off at Neil for not giving you the idol?
No, because I'm sure that transition was quick, you know, where they come to get him for medical. And then if he had given her the idol, it would be in front of everyone, probably. Yeah. So that can be even more damaging. You know, with everybody knowing you have an idol this early in the game, they can just try to vote you out and you're going to play it and they'll flush it. Yeah, I don't know what I would do. I don't know how close they really were. It's, yeah, I would have loved to have it if I'm Aubrey, but I don't know what was going through his head. He was probably pretty upset, you know. He's getting pulled from a game that he's wanted to play forever, and it seems like an innocuous medical situation where he's not being actually taken out in a helicopter on life support. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be really, really a tough time. So you're probably not thinking about other people, you know, so I don't blame him for doing that.
Were you a Neil fan? Were you sad to see him go?
I think I was either way with Neil. You know, I didn't feel strongly that I loved him. I didn't feel dislike for him. He was just kind of there.
How do you feel about ice cream?
You know, I thought it was ironic that the reward was ice cream right after the ice cream man left. So yeah. I like ice cream, you know?
Yeah.
I've never had the kind of ice cream he has. The,
yeah, sounds good.
Three twins.
What about Beast Mode Cowboy? Were you a big fan of his?
I love Beast Mode Cowboy. My daughter loves him from Big Brother.
Yeah.
So she was really rooting for him. And I really like him. I like him as a person, I think.
But did you watch Big Brother too?
I did watch. I watched some of it. I mean, I can't watch three nights a week anything. So, yeah. But I liked him. My daughter kept asking where his girlfriend was from Big Brother. Because remember, he was a stalker.
Oh, I remember. I remember.
Yeah, he's kind of like stalking.
A lot of people don't remember. I remember.
Well, my daughter did too. She's like, where's his girlfriend? That girl that he really liked. And I'm like, I don't think that's his girlfriend.
Yeah. No, that was not. That was the problem, I think.
Yeah. So, she thought it was romantic, I guess.
Okay.
The rest of the world thought it was stalking.
But she doesn't know about those things yet.
No, no.
Like, boy, that guy's really romantic.
She's in love with a boy named Dominic, though.
Whoa. It's a good name.
And my first boyfriend's name was Dominic. So not to put that curse on your young son. Maybe it's the McQuillan women, just like little
maybe.
Dominics.
Maybe. All right. This is from Taylor Bybee, who wants to know, who do you think that you would get along with in this cast this season? Who do you think would be your rival? Okay. Do you think there's somebody that seems like that they would be like the new Abby Maria and your BFF you never knew you wanted?
Oof. I don't know who would be my BFF in this cast. I like Aubrey the most.
I could see that.
I think she and I, like, we could have been college roommates or something.
Yeah.
You know, actually, we would both have, like, the cheerleader roommate, and then we would convene in whoever's room was not cooler to hang out.
Yeah. What'd you think that when she said that she's, you know, figuring everything out just like she's Cochran's dream girl?
I didn't understand that so much. I was trying to figure out what that meant.
Yeah.
Can you explain it to me?
Yeah. I think that she's saying that, oh, Cochran's dream girl would be a woman who is like figuring out all the scenarios on Survivor. And I kind of feel like that would probably not be Cochran's dream girl.
Yeah. I think maybe it was a reference to South Pacific Cochran, where he's just kind of like, what do I do?
Yeah, I think that's probably like referencing the ideal of Cochran as opposed to probably the actual person of Cochran, which probably in the number one thing he's looking for in a woman is probably not somebody who's a master survivor strategist.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's looking for that in a relationship.
In a mate, yeah.
I don't know. Is anyone on that one of those apps where they put, I am a master? Maybe Nick does.
Well, let me just tell you from my own experience. One, I haven't met any women who are looking for that. And there could be nothing less interesting to my wife also from my own experience.
Yeah. Mr. Cass does not care about Survivor.
Right.
He does not. He doesn't even know what's going on this season. He took our one TV to Texas. He has not been watching.
Yeah.
So I guarantee you he has no idea what's going on at Ponderosa or Secret Scenes or anything. I mean, he sometimes asks me who was that person after someone gets voted out that he hasn't seen all season.
Yes.
So, like, I didn't know she was there. You know? It's happened a couple of seasons. So
yeah. Jordan Chong, let's know, Cass, how much of flipping is based off of the right game move and how much is making good TV? I'm assuming that Jordan is talking about in the game in terms of the vote and not of the bird.
Oh, yeah.
but you're not thinking about this is good TV when you're making a vote, right?
You're not, when you're out there, you're not even thinking you're on TV. Mm-hmm. You're just thinking you're playing this game of Survivor, right? I can't think of anyone. I mean, I guess there's been some characters who've really played it up kind of in their confessionals. Maybe they were trying to be good TV, but I can't think of any time someone's like, I'm going to do this because it's going to be good TV. Or, you know, I've been accused of playing for third place and trying to get back on the show. No, I really was trying to win my first season. So
it's a good move. Yeah, it did work.
It did work. I got further than I ever would have gotten. And I got made good TV without even, you know.
Right.
So I don't think people are worrying about good TV. I mean, I did think about it when I grouped up with Spencer in Second Chances. I thought, you know, everyone's expecting me to want to get Spencer out, but it's not good for my game at that point. And additionally, it would make great TV for some of the viewers who think there's this big rivalry. So I guess I did think about it then, but it wasn't like a factor of I'm going to do this just for the viewers.
Yeah. You know?
So I would hope nobody's doing that just so they can go down in a blazing ball of flames and hope that the show lasts long enough for them to get back on. Because really, when you're a flipper and you return, you have no chance of winning.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
If you have a reputation like
Whoa, what about Cochran?
Yeah, but he was the biggest flipper,
and then he came back and he did win.
Yeah, but that was a fan's favorite, which doesn't really count because you're playing with a bunch of new players. I think any time returning players get to play new players, duh.
Yeah, but in fairness to Cochran and Cochran's dream girl, potentially, who might be out there listening, I would say that by the time they got to the merge in that season, I think it was like 8 returning players and like only I think maybe 3 new players, so it was pretty much by the time they got to the merge, you know, veteran season.
Well, I really think that had I not been playing with someone who had such a vendetta against me in Second Chances, I definitely would have gotten further, you know. That was my big mistake in going back and playing with so many people I had played with before,
yeah,
because I was able to overcome all of the hesitations people had, you know, during my 19 days out there.
Okay. Well, Cass, that leads us to third time's the charm then. Maybe it was, you know, it wasn't meant to be on a second chance. Maybe it's a third chance.
Oh God. I don't think I have it in me until I'm like, you know, maybe I could be the oldest woman to play.
Yes. Yeah.
70.
I think we're on to something.
Yeah. I'll be like, call me back when I'm 70. Let's see. Well, how about 74? Then I could be the oldest player ever.
Yeah. Call me Cataract Cass.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my new name.
Challenges with walkers, please. No, that's not fair to the septuagenarians out there.
Yeah.
No, we're being totally ageist.
Look, we are going into an age of miracle medicine, and we're going to see. I think we're going to have an 80-year-old play Survivor in the next 10 years.
I don't know. I think you just get tired, you know, and a little crotchety.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody does out there, but
crotchety Cass?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, I'm already crotchety. I don't need to be 80 to be crotchety.
You have two little boys at home.
Even from before that. I think I was crotchety as a teenager, I think.
Crotchety Sister Nino.
Yeah, that's me.
I think it's all your plaid shirts.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, like maybe go with a stripe.
I will give that a shot. All right. Oh, well, Cass, thank you so much for coming on with me. I greatly appreciate you taking some time. I know you got a lot going on these days with the move as you move into Texas. Have you looked up what other survivors live in Texas that you might be able to start hanging out with?
Well, my good friend Cammie lives there.
Yes. Okay.
Which is, do you know how cool it is as a Survivor fan to say, like, I talked to Cammie and Abby and these people? I mean, Varner, all these people. It's really neat.
Yeah. I got a good sense of that.
Oh, yeah, I know. But you're like real really into it. I'm just like a small town person who played it. Yeah. So, Colby, it's, wait a minute. Doesn't Colby live there?
I don't know if he might live here. I don't know what he does now.
Yeah.
I mean, Colby, Texas is a big place, so I don't know exactly the geography of... What about Russell Hance? Is he in Texas?
He's dead to me. I think... Is he in Texas or Louisiana?
I'm not sure.
He's down on the Gulf Coast. Mike...
Yeah, Mike Holloway?
Mike Holloway has threatened to visit.
Yes. What about Missy?
Missy, she'll probably just show up.
Yeah.
Maybe on my birthday.
We'll just show up.
Yeah, when it's your birthday. So awesome. You're going to have so many new Texas Survivor friends.
I mean, and all that Dirty 30 crowd, they're all homeless, so they'll probably float through Texas.
You would feel like at some point that that would be the case, right? All right.
I'm sure there'll be some Texan survivors.
Yeah, I think so. All right, well, Cass,
I'm just gonna hang out with normal people, Rob.
All right, well, you give it a shot, you never know.
Hey, what about Ponderosa? And do you guys watch that?
Do I watch the Ponderosa clips?
Yeah,
of course. Yeah.
So with this jury forming, I don't feel like they're really taking their role too seriously.
How so? What do you mean?
Like, when I got there, I was like, all right, this is a new part of the game. The job is to guide the jury. Whereas Neil is delusional, which is pretty much what everyone in Survivor calls anyone else who's played.
Yes.
Right?
Anybody who played Survivor calls anybody else that played Survivor delusional.
Pretty much at any point in their interview process, the post game.
Right, because they think that they were the winners. And obviously, as a Survivor player, we know that I was going to be the winner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the D word is thrown about loosely. But... I think Neil is in a different place as a first juror.
Yeah.
Because of how he went out. So he's not bitter against anyone. Nick only said he doesn't like Debbie. So yes. Debbie's not getting his vote. So I'm just wondering how that's going to shape up, because neither of these guys were too committed to anything but themselves.
Mm-hmm. So you feel like that you need to have there to be more sort of, what would you say is the right word? Is it anger? Is it more dedication?
It's focus on the task at hand.
Focus. That's what you said. That's what you need to win the game. Is that also what you need to be the president of Ponderosa?
Yes, to win the jury.
Okay. All right, we'll see. So maybe somebody will come in and whip these guys into shape.
Yeah. And I think having a man on the jury first is very important. So, because they're more likely to not hold the grudge.
Do you think that's a real thing? That would you feel like that women hold the grudges more on the juries than men?
I think for the most part, yeah. If you blindside a woman or do something, they're going to be, especially the type of woman that goes on Survivor.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm trying to think just like running through the numbers in my seasons. Or in all the seasons, I'm trying to think of seasons that have. Do you believe in a bitter jury?
I do. I do think there's a bitter jury.
Yeah.
I think the first person there sets the tone for the jury, and I think that men are more likely to be like, "Oh, let's just get over it and get home."
Mm-hmm.
You know, like my plan was to put not to write down the person who became the first juror's name. Certainly not be behind it. And make sure they were the nicest person possible to go on the jury first. So some people failed on that in second chances, but
right. But I have to feel like that. I don't feel like that. It's a male female thing. Cause if I think back to some of the most bitter jurors, like I'm thinking of a lot of different men that are out there that are pretty angry jurors.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on the tone out of which they go out.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it's an in-your-face blindside, a big betrayal.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's something that we can track through. Maybe an off-season podcast.
Well, look into that idols and winners phenomenon.
Oh, well, that's good. I think you're onto something there. That I'd rubber stamp right now. We don't need to do any research on that one.
And especially because there's so many idols in recent seasons.
Yeah. You know,
there's three out there at a time, four sometimes. So yeah, I'd like to see a winner who doesn't have an idol.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's going to happen.
Debunk my theory.
No, it's good. I think you're onto something with that one. Cass, do you have a hashtag for this podcast?
What did we say? Crotchety Cass?
Crotchety Cass, Cataract Cass. We have also Morganic.
Oh yeah, it's Morganic.
All right.
I don't know.
Let's
I didn't
go
have
with
too
that.
Many good ones.
That's fun.
Organic.
That's fun. Of course, you could follow Cass on Twitter, even though Cass isn't tweeting that much these days. She's still at Cass McHugh. Once in a while, you'll get a tweet from her if you're good.
And I usually respond to people's comments if they tag me and don't say something wrong.
Yeah. I'm just trying to see what were you saying to Neil on Twitter?
Oh, they were trying to say that they were there first, so they were the king of Twitter or something, or mayor, and I just told them that, you know, the rules of, I don't know what I said.
You said, actually, you abandoned the island, so finders, keepers, losers, weepers applies per Probes Island law. So hold on, but you also left the Ponderosa too, but are you the last reigning, like, that you left office and you retain your title?
Well, in Cambodia, at least.
Yeah.
Right?
So,
I mean, I feel like I can't be the queen of Ponderosa in, you know, a country I've never been to. Although I could. I could send someone out to conquer new Ponderosas.
Yes.
On my behalf. I'll have to get on that. But then I would have to know who's there. So.
Okay.
Yeah. It's too much work. I just want to watch the show and, you know, enjoy it for what it is.
Okay, well, I'm sure everybody enjoyed hearing from you. It's always a treat for me. And best of luck with the move. And hopefully it's not too long before we can do this again.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
Have
a good one.
All right. Take care, Cass. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Chaos Cass back here on the podcast. Always very, very fun to check in with Cass. She always has good stuff to say. Sorry that the connection was not amazing there. And thank you guys for bearing with it. But, you know, it's worth it to hear what Cass has to say. All right. So that's going to do it for us here today. The next podcast you're going to hear is going to be the voicemail show with Akiva Winokur. We're going to go through all of your thoughts about this episode. Looking forward to that. Of course, get into the Survivor social media, all that good stuff. That's going to be coming up next. If you haven't checked out the exit interview with Nick, that's up on robinsthewebsite.com as well. Then on Friday, we're going to segue into talking Big Brother Canada and the Amazing Race. Very excited about all of that coming up at the end of the week here on robinsthewebsite.com. Thanks again to the patrons of Rob as a Podcast. Always do appreciate the support. If you want to find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/patron or click the banners in the sidebar of robhasawebsite.com. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye.